Good afternoon, good morning. I'm Dr. David Blumenthal, president of the Commonwealth Fund. Thank you for joining us to hear about the Commonwealth Fund's latest state-by-state analysis, Achieving Racial and Ethnic Equity in U.S. Healthcare, a scorecard of state performance. This will be published tomorrow. I'll provide some brief background, then Dave Radley, the fund's senior scientist of tracking health system performance, and the study's lead author, will give an overview of the scorecard findings. Then we'll hear from Lori Zephyrin, the fund's vice president of advancing health equity and a study co-author, who will discuss what the findings mean for our healthcare system and the people in it. They will be joined at the end by their colleague and co-author, Jesse Baumgartner, for the question and answers. Before we move on, I want to remind you that the information discussed during this session is embargoed until 12:01 a.m. on November 18th. There has hardly been a time I can recall when the value of examining states' healthcare system has been more apparent. As we have watched states take vastly different approaches to managing COVID-19, the very direct impact of different policy choices and approaches on people's lives and health has been made crystal clear. In short, health policies matter to people's day-to-day lives. For generations, federal, state, and local leaders have made policy choices that have produced worse health outcomes for people of color, including economic suppression, residential segregation, and failing to invest in the places where people of color live and work. These and other factors have contributed to social determinants of health, such as income, food, and housing security, and education, that significantly affect health outcomes for people of color. However, policy decisions have also affected access to and quality of health services available to racial and ethnic groups. While it was difficult to disentangle the influence of social determinants and services on disparities in health and health care, there is no question that healthcare services are an important source of observed inequities. The scorecard we'll be discussing today is a comprehensive comparative analysis of how healthcare systems across the U.S. are functioning for people of color. It assesses how state healthcare systems are doing when it comes to providing basic quality healthcare services, affordable and accessible care, and effective treatment and follow-up. Most importantly, the scorecard explores a vital question. Are people of color having different experiences than white people within the same health system? Almost always the answer is yes. In fact, our analysis exposes a range of deep-seated racial and ethnic healthcare inequities within all 50 states and the District of Columbia. There's little doubt that the pandemic has exacerbated these inequities and other weaknesses in our healthcare system. Structural racism and generations of disinvestment in communities of color are chief among the many factors contributing to these pervasive issues. If we want to get the pandemic under control and mitigate longstanding injustices in our healthcare system and beyond, we need to dismantle the racist policies and practices that have led us here and create a truly equitable healthcare system. Now I'll turn to Dave Radley and Lori Zephyrin for an in-depth discussion of the findings.
Thank you, David. Please turn to Exhibit 2 in your chart pack. As David highlighted, racial and ethnic disparities in people's health and in the healthcare they receive are no secret and they're not new. These inequities are longstanding, they're intertwined with socioeconomic status, and rooted in state and federal policies that have perpetuated unequal opportunity for people of color. Maybe you've followed our scorecard series over the years, which has been a useful tool for understanding state differences in health system performance. But the fact is, state averages can mask profound inequities in the way that different people experience healthcare. Instead, we needed a tool that goes deeper to help quantify those differences and to help understand the magnitude of racial and ethnic health inequities in every state. Please turn to slide 3. Our new state equity scorecard is the latest update in our scorecard series. It taps the most currently available data to assess how well the healthcare system is working for people of color in every state. This year's report looks at 24 measures of performance stratified for 5 racial and ethnic groups, including Black, Latino, Native, Asian, and White Americans. The data timeframes in this report vary by indicator, but generally reflect 2019 and 20. So while some of the information is pre-pandemic, in all likelihood, the pandemic has only exacerbated many of the inequities highlighted throughout the report. We calculate summary performance scores by combining data across measures for each racial and ethnic group within the state, and then we rank states based on how well they perform for each group. Please turn to slide 4. We found that health equity does not exist in any state in the U.S., not even in states with historically stronger health systems. In every state, we see that health system performance is markedly worse for people of color compared to white people. In particular, people of color tend to experience worse health outcomes, have less access to care, and often receive lower quality of care. 6 states did stand out for having higher than average performance for all racial and ethnic groups that we can measure. These states include Massachusetts, Connecticut, Rhode Island, New York, Hawaii, and Oregon. They also tended to have some of the smallest, albeit still evident, within-state disparities between the groups with the best and worst performance. In other states like Minnesota, Michigan, and Wisconsin, health system performance was particularly strong for white residents, but lacking among Black, Latino, and Native Americans, as these states had some of the largest within-state disparities. And finally, there were a number of states, including Oklahoma and Mississippi, where performance was weak overall for all racial and ethnic groups. In these states, despite low scores for even the highest performing groups, there were still sizable inequities in each state. Please turn to slide 5. We ranked each state based on how well it performed for each of 5 racial and ethnic groups. In chart 5, we highlight the overall health system performance ranking for white people, represented by the blue dots. The center line in the chart is the average performance for all people in all racial and ethnic groups. A couple of things stand out. The first is that in almost every state, health system performance experienced by white people is better than the average performance achieved among people in all other groups. I'm sorry, in all groups, not all other groups. This is evident when the blue dots are positioned above the center line. In fact, there are only 3 states, West Virginia, Oklahoma, and Mississippi, where health system performance for white people in the state is lower than the all-group average, evident when the blue dot is positioned below the center line. The other thing that stands out is that in almost all states, health system performance experienced by white people is the highest observed in the state. There are only a handful of states, for example, Maryland, Michigan, and Pennsylvania, where some group other than white had higher performance, represented by the gray dots floating above the blue dot. In each of these cases, the highest performing group happened to be Asian Americans. Please turn to slide 6, where we highlight state health system performance rankings for Black people. In contrast to what you saw in the previous chart, notice how in nearly every state, health system performance for Black people is lower than the all-group average, evident when the green dot is positioned below the center line. There are only 5 states, Rhode Island, Massachusetts, Maryland, Connecticut, and New York, where we see performance for Black residents higher than the all-group average. The other thing to note is that in every state, even the top performers, Black people are faring substantially worse than the top performing groups. The disparities are particularly profound in Michigan and Wisconsin. Please turn to slide 7, where we highlight state rankings for Latino populations. The story here is similar to what we saw for Black people. First, we see that health system performance among Latino individuals is well below the all-group average in almost all states, evident where the yellow dot is positioned below the center line. And second, we see that in every state, health system performance for Latino populations is generally far below the highest performing group. Here again, several states do stand out for having relatively smaller disparities, for example, Massachusetts and Hawaii, while several others like Maryland, Delaware, and Minnesota have much wider gaps. Please turn to chart 8. I mentioned at the outset that there were 6 states that stand out for having higher health system performance for all groups that we could measure. Connecticut, Hawaii, Massachusetts, New York, Oregon, and Rhode Island are featured on the left side of this chart. Despite being among the top performing states for some groups, particularly Asian Americans represented by the orange dots and white people represented by the blue dots, we still see sizable performance gaps for Black and Latino people. On the right side of Chart 8, we highlight the three states, Mississippi, Oklahoma, and West Virginia, where health system performance was below average for all groups that we could measure. What's notable here is that even though health system performance in each of these states was lower overall, Black, Latino, and Native American populations in these states still experienced far worse health care than white people, and in fact saw some of the lowest performance scores for any group in the country. Please turn to the next slide. On Chart 9, we highlight several states with some of the widest within-state disparity gaps. That is, the performance differences between the top and bottom performing groups within the same state. We've highlighted six examples here, but the experience in these states is common across the country. Across these six states, health system performance experienced by Black, Latino, and Native Americans is well below that experienced by Asian and whites, evident when the green, yellow, and dark gray dots are positioned lower than the orange and blue dots. And in most cases, performance for these groups is also well below the all-group average, with Latino individuals in Michigan as the only exception. Please move ahead two charts to number 11. The summary rankings we've discussed so far are derived by combining data from specific measures. We evaluated 24 measures in total reflecting health outcomes, healthcare access, and healthcare quality. We can't discuss all 24 here today, but a few key measures did stand out. We'll start with health outcomes. As I noted at the outset, mortality rates tend to be higher for Black people than for people in other racial and ethnic groups. Chart 11 illustrates premature death from healthcare treatable conditions, focusing on the rates for Black people. Note the performance direction in this chart is reversed compared to earlier slides, such that higher dots reflect higher mortality and worse performance. What the chart tells us is that in almost all states, premature mortality rates among Black people are higher than the average of all groups, indicated by the green dot being positioned above the line, and that premature mortality rates are much higher among Black individuals compared to other populations in the same state with the lowest rates. And if you turn to slide 12, you'll see a similar pattern for Native American and Alaska Native populations, where the dark gray dots are positioned above the center line in most states and above the light gray dots representing the lowest mortality rate in each state. Please skip ahead two charts to number 14. Chart 14 illustrates one of our healthcare access measures, uninsured rates among adults ages 19 to 64. The exhibit features uninsured rates for Latino adults, but tells a now familiar story. And again, please note that the higher positioning of the dots reflect higher uninsured rates and lower performance. Uninsured rates among Latino adults are higher than average in all but Hawaii, Massachusetts, and DC. And within each state, uninsured rates among Latinos are generally much higher than the group with the lowest rate. While some states have smaller gaps, like Hawaii and Massachusetts, in Tennessee, we see a 40 percentage point difference in the uninsured rate for Latinos compared to the lowest rate group. In this case, that's Asian Americans. And if you turn to chart 15, you can see a similar, albeit slightly attenuated, pattern for uninsured rates among Black adults. Please turn to slide 16. The scorecard finds that health equity does not exist in the U.S. Even in states with relatively strong performing health systems, people of color, particularly Black, Latino, and Native Americans, have a higher mortality, less access to care, and are more likely to receive lower quality care compared to white people. We've come to these conclusions by combing through a lot of data, so much that it can be overwhelming. To that end, we've created a number of tools to help make this data more accessible. Please turn to slide 17. The state scorecard will be available both as an online report and in a downloadable PDF format. The online version features several interactive data visualizations that allow readers to focus on areas of interest and to more easily zero in on specific states. We've also created profiles for each state and each racial and ethnic group featured in this report. The downloadable report and profiles can be accessed via the password-protected page you logged into for this teleconference. Please turn to slide 18. The state profiles include detailed summary tables with each state's performance data for all population groups and all 24 measures that we used in this report. The information on the state profiles is grouped according to performance dimension to help users focus on areas of relative strength as well as identify areas where improvement is needed. The state profiles can be downloaded in a PDF format. Please turn to slide 19. In addition to the state profiles, we've also developed a profile for each racial and ethnic group. These group profiles detail state rankings, identify top and bottom performing states, and contain tables with data for each performance measure. And with that, I'd like to turn it over to my colleague and co-author, Dr. Lori Zephrin, to discuss some of the implications of the findings of this report. Lori?
Great. Thanks, Dave. Thanks for sharing those results. As we can all see, the scorecard shows us that in state after state, people of color have worse experiences and worse outcomes. What is really striking is that, as Dave stated, health equity does not exist in any state within the United States, even those with stronger health systems. And while it's in some ways striking to see how deeply entrenched and damaging these inequities are, it is, of course, no surprise. The root causes of these inequities have been in existence for decades, centuries even, and as Dr. Blumenthal alluded to earlier, COVID-19 has unveiled for many the influence of structural racism on these disparities. It is important to realize that these statistics translate to people, real people experiencing firsthand the impacts of racial inequities on their health, their well-being, and their lives. And as we all know, knowledge is power, and data like this that tells us a very specific story of how people of color are experiencing healthcare where they live. This data can also be used to orient our work, all of our work, to create a more equitable healthcare system. But first, I think it's important to talk about how we got here. Structural racism causes inequities in the drivers of health, the social determinants of health, such as stable, affordable housing, access to healthy food, having a reliable income, and interpersonal safety. And we know that the drivers of health impact about 80% of our health outcomes. Additionally, we also have to acknowledge the impacts of structural racism within the four walls of a healthcare system. And I'm using walls and health system loosely here. I have air quotes, but you can't see me. That results in, one, unequal access to quality healthcare, two, unequal treatment, and then three, unequal outcome. And if we think about unequal access, with people of color less likely to receive preventative health services, irrespective of income, neighborhood, comorbid illness, or insurance type, and often more likely to receive lower quality care. In terms of unequal treatment, recent survey studies show that more than a third of Black and Latinx adults report that they or household members who had seen a healthcare professional or been hospitalized overnight experienced one or more forms of discrimination, including not being offered the best available treatment, being denied or delayed access to needed healthcare services, and not being referred to see specialists because of their race, ethnicity, or the language that they speak. And this results in three, unequal outcomes, which we see manifest in the scorecard data. And some clear examples of the disparities we see are, for example, in breast cancer survival or in COVID rates, and even in our maternal mortality and morbidity crisis, which is costing us not only in lives, but also in dollars. A recent report showing about $32 billion or more for preventable maternal morbidity, for example. So what do we do? As a healthcare provider myself, I know that health inequities can't be meaningfully addressed without fixing our systems and structures and addressing root causes. And advancing health and racial equity in the healthcare system will require policies that confront the underlying structures that have brought us to this point. We need policies that really ensure high quality and affordable coverage as a really important first step. For example, things like closing the Medicaid coverage gap in the 12 states that haven't expanded Medicaid or addressing postpartum coverage. We're also providing healthcare that works smarter and better, for example, by strengthening primary healthcare and improving the delivery of services by diversifying the healthcare workforce and supporting community-based healthcare workforce and investing in social services, and also improving the collection and analysis of racial and ethnic data to identify gaps. We know that it's increasingly clear that we have health inequities and that there's a substantial problem in the U.S., but many people, particularly health systems and policymakers, do not have a clear or deep understanding of these inequities or how reaching the impact is, how far-reaching the impact is. And so the collection of data is really critical. So the reality is that we can't improve healthcare without partnering with local communities to fully understand the needs and experiences of the people we serve. The pandemic has shown us that change is possible, and I really hope that the data in this new scorecard provides us, will be a starting point for achieving more equitable healthcare. So.
Thank you, Lori and Dave. We'll now open the floor to questions. Before we do, I want to remind you that all that we are also joined by our colleague and scorecard co-author, Jesse Baumgartner.
To ask a question over the phone today, please press the star, then one on your touchtone phone. You may withdraw your question at any time by pressing the pound key. And once again, for your questions, that is star and one. We'll pause a moment to allow any questions to queue. And we'll take our first question from Shalina Hetlani with Gulf States News. Please go ahead.
Hi, thank you for the report. I was wondering if you could please explain again how to actually write out how states might compare to a national average. If you could go over how you got the national average again in order for us to write out the comparison correctly.
Sure. Hi, everyone. This is David Radley. So with the national average reflects sort of a composite across 24 measures, and we calculate that for each of the five racial and ethnic groups. That we get to that national average by combining the data for each group, and then you don't see it in the charts for their teleconference, but you can see it in the report. We actually we score those states based on a 0 to 100 point scale. So you can think of those in terms of percentiles. So a score of 100 would represent sort of the best or performance in the 100th percentile, and then that center line. The average, between 0 and 100 is 50. And so that represents that average. And so we can either say that performance is above or below that average line. Does that help or do we still need some more?
Yeah, I guess I'm wondering, what does it mean to be below average, I guess?
Yeah, so I mean, the way that I would think about it, as far as being below average, for any particular, having below average performance for any given rate, any particular group, would mean, for example, let's be more concrete. Let's say we're talking about the example of, say, Black individuals in Florida. In Black individuals in Florida, they have that overall performance score is the 23rd percentile. So what that would mean is, relative to all other racial and ethnic groups, Black individuals in Florida are scoring at about that 23rd percentile. So that's well below average. That in that case actually happens to be in that bottom 25% of all groups that we are able to observe.
So how many states were included in the analysis? I guess the way I'm thinking about writing this in layman's terms would be, in your example, would I say Black individuals in Florida are performing worse than the majority of states in the analysis? Or, like, is there a number of states that I would write?
The best way to see that is probably to look at the group profile that I mentioned for Black individuals, if that's the group that you're interested in. I think you can see it a little bit easier there. I mean, we're getting pretty far into the weeds. Actually, if you wanted to follow up, you know, I can sort of probably walk you through the methods a little bit easier one-on-one. And I'm happy to follow up with you anytime this afternoon.
Thanks.
And we'll take our next question from John Daly with Colorado Public Radio. Please go ahead.
Hi there. Thanks so much for your report and for walking us through this. I have a question for Lori. I wonder if you could speak a little bit to the impact the pandemic has had on these disparities.
Sure, happy to. So we know with the pandemic has had, well, one has unveiled for many just the impact of our systemic failures and the need to really think about and address racial inequities. I think for many, the pandemic has highlighted the impact of structural racism and how, you know, not having, you know, access to communities that are, for example, have adequate housing or having access to health insurance or having the ability to work from home or other inequities in the social determinants or drivers of health really impact health and health care. You know, we've also seen with the pandemic also just strained healthcare infrastructure, you know, significant income impacts and really worsening of social determinants of health in terms of the economic inequalities, in addition to some of the care delivery challenges as well around having access to care, in addition to the clinical aspect, whether we're talking about, you know, the COVID-19 and the inequities in the distribution of COVID-19 and also in deaths from COVID-19. And so I think it's really important to, you know, as we think about these findings, you know, if we sort of overlay the pandemic on this, you know, what we're really talking about is the need to really intentionally address these racial inequities in a meaningful way. Because we would anticipate that because of the pandemic, probably these inequities, many of these inequities can be worse. Having said that, I also think it's important to highlight, you know, as a result of the pandemic, there were significant policy changes around access to coverage. For example, so people were able to, for example, stay on Medicaid insurance or have more marketplace coverage. And so also because of policy changes within the pandemic and then also additional policy changes afterwards. And so I also think it's important because the pandemic has shown us that we as a healthcare system and society can react and implement policies that can really affect at least access to care by improving insurance coverage as well, which is an important way to address inequities in access.
And we'll take our next question from Rebecca Carballo with the Houston Chronicle. Please go ahead.
My question, it is Texas specific, but I'm sure it also relates to other states. And, you know, the sense that Texas, we rank the lowest, I believe, in all the categories for, or not like the lowest of the states, but out of the different measures, our lowest scoring with access to care. And we are also one of the 12 states that did not expand Medicaid. Do those two things go hand in hand? Are there other factors at play here? What do you all think?
I could just jump in. There's no question that failure to cover healthcare services reduces access to those services and impedes healthcare outcomes. So Texas does relatively poorly on insurance rates generally, and the failure to expand Medicaid is one factor in leaving large numbers of residents of Texas uncovered. The 12 states that have not expanded Medicaid all have that issue. Texas also tends to have lower insurance rates for non-Medicaid eligible populations.
And does any of the data you've looked at, does it give you any ideas as to why that might be?
As to why Medicaid has not been expanded?
No, as to why, even for the non-Medicaid eligible population, we still have the lowest rates.
Sarah, if Sarah's on the phone, she might want to address that question. Okay, I think that the answer is multifactorial, but one contribution is the mix of employers and the extent to which employers offer insurance, and the extent also to which the state promotes the availability of Affordable Care Act marketplace insurance, so that if Texas, for example, does not encourage uninsured people who are eligible for subsidies in the marketplace to seek those subsidies out, then it is less likely that people who are eligible for those subsidies will actually enroll in the marketplace. We know that outreach and support of enrollment is critical for getting people to actually enroll in the available subsidized insurance that the Affordable Care Act has made available. And if a state is hostile to that activity, then it's much likely, less likely that people will seek out and get insurance to which they're entitled.
And this is Sarah Collins. In terms of Texas too, the other thing you have to keep in mind is the immigration issue. And so people who are undocumented are actually not eligible for Medicaid or subsidized coverage to the marketplaces. So that will drive some of the differences in coverage rates in states with large undocumented populations.
And then you'll have to excuse me. Was it David Blumenthal that was speaking before? I just want to make sure I have the right attribution.
Yes.
Okay, just double checking.
And we'll take our next question from Melissa Jenko with AAP News. Please go ahead.
Hi, thanks for taking my question. I just wondered what the data tell you about inequities specifically among children, if you looked at that at all.
Dave or Lori?
This is David Radley. Maybe I'll start and maybe Lori can jump in. We did have several indicators of that did specifically reflect the experience of kids. For example, a children's vaccination measure. And I think what you generally see is the same story for kids as you saw, as we see in some of the measures that are more oriented towards adults. One example though is this vaccination measure for kids. It's a measure of did kids under age three get each of seven appropriate vaccines. There has been a lot of federal state partnership on that particular vaccination program. And I think while we still see disparities across states and within states by different racial and ethnic groups, it's a good example of where those disparities are actually a little bit smaller on that particular measure, in part because so much effort actually has been made to make sure that outreach is being made, that state regulations around this very early childhood vaccinations, those state rules are strong in a lot of places, in part because of the partnership with the CDC. And so when there's that kind of federal and state partnership, it actually does sort of serve as an example of ways that you can start to, reduce the differences across states and reduce the disparities within states. Did you want to add anything, Lori?
No, I think you've covered it, Dave. Thank you.
And this is Sarah Collins, and I would also just point out the experience of the Children's Health Insurance Program. If you look at the uninsured rates across race, you have an ethnicity that there's more equity in those rates, and that has been a success of that huge expansion in coverage for children that's, you know, over time.
And we'll take our next question from Dana Branham with Oklahoman. Please go ahead.
Yes, thank you so much. So I have two questions. So Oklahoma expanded Medicaid this summer, which I don't think was within the scope of this report. But I wanted to ask what you all might expect to see as the impact in our states help access and outcomes over time with regard to Medicaid expansion.
I'll start, and then maybe Sarah can add. Medicaid expansion improves equity, and we don't know for sure that will be reflected in the data that we have been collecting, but we would expect so. That is, that there would be more use of services, more preventive care, more treatment of treatable conditions. Possible that the mortality amenable statistics that we showed you would improve in Oklahoma compared to where they are and compared to other states that have not expanded up until now. So coverage is a necessary but not sufficient condition for achieving health equity, and it's a very important step. There are, of course, other contributors that could hold Oklahoma back, but I would expect to see improvement. Sarah, I don't know if you want to add anything to that.
Yes, and that has been the experience of other states. When states that have expanded Medicaid, I mean, the provisions of the Affordable Care Act on coverage have generally reduced disparities in insurance coverage, at least over time. So that's been a significant consequence of the Affordable Care Act's coverage expansions. And if you look at states that have expanded and haven't expanded, those inequities have narrowed much more significantly in states that did expand relative to those that didn't. And so we're going to expect to see similar experiences in Oklahoma.
Thank you both. I just had one other question, if that's all right. So for a state like Oklahoma, where our health outcomes are pretty poor overall, but then there are significant racial inequities as well, I guess, is there any difference in the way that you approach that in terms of solutions and sort of the path forward when health outcomes are low across the board?
And I wanted to point out that I've been talking to Sarah Collins to answer questions. I did not introduce her. She is our Vice President for Healthcare Coverage and Access and supervises our state's scorecard work. With respect to your question, coverage is critical so that the levels of overall insurance coverage are important determinants of a state's performance on all dimensions of its healthcare system. So again, this issue of whether people enroll, whether they're encouraged to enroll, whether they take full advantage of the available coverage options through the Affordable Care Act, whether it's Medicaid or the ACA marketplaces, will be one determinant. The high-performing states like Hawaii and Oregon or Massachusetts or Rhode Island, if it has lower uninsured, higher uninsured rates than those states do. And then there are other issues like in Oklahoma, for example, there are large numbers of Native Americans, and they use a different healthcare system, the Indian healthcare system, to a large degree. So improving the performance of that element of the healthcare system would be very important in Oklahoma compared, for example, to other states that have fewer Native American residents. So So each state has somewhat different challenges, but insurance is a common denominator.
Mm-hmm. And we'll take our next question from Merrill Guzner with Guz News. Please go ahead.
Thank you. Thanks for the excellent presentation. I have a question just about, do data exist for looking within states for, say, income group within each ethnic or racial group, which might enable us to get some better insights into what the sort of comparably situated people in different ethnic groups or racial groups are doing in terms of the indicators you've looked at?
So Dave, do you want to start?
Sure. This is David Radley. The short answer is yes. There are data available that can, in some cases, allow you to do that. I mean, the reality is, a lot of these data sources that get used for reports like this one, including this one, they come from federal surveys or other types of federal data sets, and so. When you start cutting by state, by race, and then by income, the sample sizes become very small. So I want to just preface this by saying that data exists, but there are a lot of challenges to using data with such small sample sizes. I think what's more important, though, is we've done – this particular report doesn't try to adjust for income. But we have done other work. Particularly looking at the effects at health insurance coverage, where some of the data sources are a little bit more robust, that do allow us to look at the sort of simultaneous effect of race and income, you know, at the same time. And what we see in those reports is that even when you control for income, when you're looking at the experience of people in the same income bands but by race, you still see that Black individuals and Latinx individuals in particular have much higher uninsured rates than white people with the same income level. Lori, I probably should just hand it off to you. You see similar similar types of impacts when you look at some maternal mortality outcomes and outside of my comfort zone there. So maybe you can highlight those, Lori.
No, I think just to add to what you said and to just add some more to the question, you know, there's staggering disparities that persist across socioeconomic, racial, and educational backgrounds, right, due to structural barriers in place. And we know that the factors that, are optimal, that provide optimal healthcare outcomes and access, related to, are affected by, like, high costs, lack of transportation, restricted access to healthy foods, language barriers, inadequate insurance coverage, which has been talked about extensively, and also low availability of healthcare providers. And so, when we look at people of color, whether we're talking about Black people or Native American or Latinx people, they're less likely to receive preventive services irrespective of income, irrespective of neighborhood, comorbid illness, or insurance type, and often receive lower quality care. And so I think that's really important, even as we think beyond the coverage issues, to also think about, how care is delivered and how it manifests and people's ability to access care. In terms of what Dave was mentioning around maternal health, I think the maternal health inequities are a clear example of just, the disparities that we're talking about and the impact of structural racism on our society, whether we're talking about addressing unequal treatment. There's data that shows that hospitals that serve more Black people are more likely to perform worse on delivery indicators and provide worse quality care, or that, Black birthing people, for example, are less likely to receive key preventative screening from their providers, for example, around postpartum depression, or receive access to mental health services, or less likely to receive health guidance, for example. And also when we think about experience, people also, Black birthing people and Indigenous people are more likely to report being treated unfairly and with disrespect, not having decision autonomy, feeling pressured. And many of this results in unequal outcomes. And so, a Black person with a college education, for example, is 60% greater risk for a maternal death than a whiter Hispanic person with less than a high school education. And so we really have to, as we look at these inequities that we're seeing, we have to really dive deep into them and understand the root causes.
Thank you.
And we'll take our next question from Stephen Johnson with U.S. News and World Report. Please go ahead.
Hi. Thank you for taking my question. I was wondering if you could explain some of the factors that contribute to you. There doesn't seem to be a lot of clear-cut correlation among the Latinx population in terms of the relation to lack of healthcare access to some of the health outcomes. When I look at some of the national averages, Latinx population seems to have lower than better health outcomes or outcomes that come below national averages in terms of being better. But when it comes to access, healthcare access, they rank high among those who are uninsured, have high out-of-pocket medical costs, things such as that. So I was wondering if you could explain that.
Lori, do you want to take that?
I can start briefly, and then maybe Dave can weigh in. I think that goes to the challenges of the data. I mean, when we talk about Latinx Hispanic people, they're not a monolith, and so there's a lot of heterogeneity within the context of Black and of Latinx and Hispanic people. And so there's, the impact potentially of immigration status, there's the impact of race as well. And so that really, to me, it just means that's an area where we need better data to be able to really understand the nuances within the individual subgroups. And I think that applies to all of the data and the data challenges in terms of really not treating people as monoliths and being able to dive into their unique experiences. For example, in New York City, for example, there's variations across Latinx and Hispanic people, whether depending on where they come from, whether their origins are Dominican Republic or from Mexico or from Chile. So there's really whether they identify as Afro-Latina or not. So there's a lot of heterogeneity that I think needs to be better understood.
And this is Dave Radley. Just a really quick follow-up just to build on that. I mean, this is something we've seen in this data for as long as we've been able to track it, and where particularly on mortality amenable to healthcare, let's just use that as an example, where the rates for Latinx people are in fact lower than other populations of color. I think there's a couple of things if you sort of read the literature on this that start to help to help us understand. Some of it may be a bit of an age effect in a lot of states. The Latinx populations tend to be a little bit younger than in other states. I think what's interesting is when you look at certain states like Colorado, for example, and Texas and New Mexico too, where the Latinx population, tends to be a little bit more like multi-generational. The mortality rates on mortality amenable tend to be a little bit closer to what you see, for example, for white people in those states. I think it's fair to say we haven't teased all of that out. We don't know exactly what's going on, but it sort of points to this idea that just like Lori said, just to sort of double down on that, the Latinx group isn't one group of people across the country. That group of individuals is very different depending on where you are in the country.
So just to summarize, I think we have some hypotheses about why this difference may exist. It's been observed before. It shows that health services are not the, as we've acknowledged, not the only influence on health status. And you can be the recipient of inequitable health services, but still do better than other groups. Another factor that is often cited is that people who have recently immigrated to the United States may in general be healthier than people who have been residing in the United States for a long period of time. The stress and challenge of immigration defines a healthier group of people. So there are many possible explanations, but I do think it's an open question that certainly deserves further research.
Thank you.
Thank you.
And we'll take our next question from Sojourner Abi with WHYY News. Please go ahead.
Hi, thank you all so much for the report. I had two questions. The first one being, are we going to have access to disaggregated data for the Asian American and Pacific Islander categories? Just wondering, because there's been sort of a push because the category sort of encompasses 30 plus distinct ethnic groups. And we saw, for instance, in New York, where, for instance, when they were looking at COVID burden in the early part of the pandemic, it looked like Asian Americans across the board didn't have a significant COVID burden, but when it was disaggregated, we saw sort of comparable COVID burdens amongst South Asians, for instance, that were comparable to like Black American and Latinx COVID burdens in the state. What do you all think about that?
This is Dave Radley. Unfortunately, we sort of can't break down the data beyond these categories. And mostly because the data source, like we're using categories that exist in the data sources that we're using to build this report. So for example, we use a data source called the Behavioral Risk Factor Surveillance System, BRFIS, if you've heard of that. That group, the Asian American, Native Hawaiian, that's the flag that's assigned to those respondents in that survey, and I can't break it down any further. And that's in that particular data source, but it's true for other data sources as well. So, you know, at some level, we've sort of broken down the data as far as we can get. And I think that sort of speaks to sort of, you know, what Lori mentioned during her remarks. We really need to do a better job of creating data collection systems that actually capture the kinds of nuance that you're talking about. Right now, the data systems that we have are not particularly good at that. Boy, it sure would be nice if we could do a better job than what we can currently do with the tools that we have available to us, at least on these big federal surveys that sort of we rely on, right?
Absolutely. Thank you for your response. My last question was sort of in regards, I was looking at some of the state data for Pennsylvania, for instance, and it looked like in some places, for instance, for Black residents, for example, healthcare access was relatively good, but then healthcare outcomes had like significantly lower performance within the health system. So I was wondering if you all had any thoughts about what could sort of explain those two things.
I think this gets, again, at the question of the extent to which services determine the results of healthcare results. And they are one of several factors, but not the only factor. So it is likely, and we see this in other countries where there is universal insurance and where there is widely available primary care, and for example, much more so than we have here, we still see differences between ethnic groups in those situations, as for example, in the United Kingdom. So equalizing access to care and equalizing insurance will not equalize health status, but it is essential to reducing those disparities.
Okay, thank you so much.
And we'll move next to Michael Diamond with Asbury Park Press. Please go ahead.
Hi, everyone. I have a question that you've sort of touched on, I think, and we've sort of seen this come up with vaccines, but I wonder what role mistrust in the healthcare system plays in these disparities, and how do you start to build that up?
Lori, do you want to address that?
Sure. Well, I think trust in the healthcare system is absolutely important. you know, and having trust building conversations. I also, you know, I also always also lead with, you know, in order to engender trust within a healthcare system, we need to have a healthcare system that treats people equitably and ensures that there are equitable outcomes and equitable treatment. So one way to engender trust in a healthcare system is to treat people fairly and address people's experiences, and within the healthcare system have diversity of providers that represent people that are being served, and really being able to track measures around experience and outcomes by race and ethnicity and really intervene. And so the trust building aspect, I think it's very incumbent on health systems and policymakers to really build that in, so that people can come to a healthcare system that's more trustworthy. And in terms of vaccine hesitance or vaccine confidence, I think getting people along that journey of vaccine confidence is part of building, ensuring that trust, engaging in those conversations so that people feel comfortable that their questions are being asked and they're being listened to.
Great, thank you.
And we will take our last question from Deborah Solis with Mississippi Center for Investigative Reporting. Please go ahead.
Yes, as you noted, the statistics for Mississippi are not good, and there seems to be no health equity for anybody. So I was wondering, because we do a lot of comparison with our neighboring state of Louisiana, which under Governor Edwards has expanded Medicaid, and there's a concerted push in Mississippi by the medical community, the hospital association, to get our lawmakers and our governor to expand Medicaid. And I wonder if you can tell me whether the improvements, because I noticed Louisiana had a larger net gain in improvement of its indicators, if you attribute, how much you attribute that to the expansion of Medicaid.
Sarah, do you want to?
Yeah, I'll jump in. Thank you. This is Sarah Collins. It's a really critical question for states that haven't expanded. The evidence of not expanding really does come through in these data, and we know it from other analyses and research that's been done that, you know, and David Blumenthal has said this, that improving people's health care requires people to have health insurance coverage, and you're not going to see a narrowing of disparities in states like Mississippi unless you provide health insurance coverage for everyone in the state. And we've seen the experience in other states that disparities narrow in coverage once they expand Medicaid. So this would be a critical first step for Mississippi. It's not the last step. It would be a critical first one.
Thank you.
But I also think it's fair to say that there are issues with healthcare in Mississippi that we cannot comment on directly from this data. But Mississippi performs poorly for insured and uninsured patients. So there are healthcare delivery issues and also probably lifestyle and culture issues that affect Mississippi more profoundly than many other states.
That's definitely true. The irony is that when it comes to the COVID vaccine, there's been a larger percentage of Black Mississippians to get the vaccine than white Mississippians, and it's largely because of their mobilization within the Black community here.
Well, that's great news. It's great news for Black people in Mississippi, but not so great for the people who are not getting vaccinated.
And there are no further questions at this time.
So just thank you all for joining us today. If you need additional information, we'll be available this afternoon. Dave Radley's already indicated that he's happy to explain methodological questions. And one final reminder, the embargo for this report lists 12:01 a.m. tomorrow, November 18th. Thanks again for attending and listening.